Compliance is a profession where people work tirelessly to make the world a better place. And there are hundreds of amazing and inspiring women who have helped the field develop into what it is today. Great Women in Compliance is part of the Compliance Podcast Network as they talk with women in compliance who are making a difference.
Hello, and welcome to Great Women in Compliance, sponsored by Compliance Podcast Network and Corporate Compliance Insights. I am Hema Lomax, and I'm thrilled to be here with my co-host, Lisa Fine. This is our inaugural Compliance Podcast, where we have a roundtable and two guests. So we are so grateful to our two guests today, Fatima Merchant, who's a partner at Shepherd Mullin, and Karen Johnson, who's Vice President of Ethics and Compliance at VF Corporation. These are dear friends of mine. I'm so grateful to know them and to have them in my circle. And today we're going to talk a little bit about what it's like to have this compliance circle. So I'm going to start by asking Karen. Karen, look, it can be a lonely profession. How have you navigated that?
Yeah. So when I first went into ethics and compliance, I was recruited into a company by a dear friend of mine. So I was really fortunate to have an internal network at 21st Century Fox. And so that was my first step. I've always had strong women connections and friends at work, Fatima being one of them when I was in the law firm. And we started out just as coworkers, Jessica, Hayden, and I. And then we had another very close coworker who also supported us, and we all supported each other. And then when I left and went into the retail and apparel space, VF is the parent company, for those who don't know, which is pretty much everybody. VF is the parent company of the North Face, Vans, Timberland, Smartwool, many other brands. And when I came into the retail and apparel space, what was fascinating to me is that all of a sudden, I was in an industry where there was tons of industry-wide collaboration, right? So lots of people talking to each other and benchmarking and asking how things were done. And so I really started doing that a lot more, just informally reaching out to people. And then I've always looked to build community, or I don't know whatever you want to call it, but community with other women professionals, other male professionals too. And I then started with a few of you, including you, Hema, a small group, which we call the Wolf Pack, after Abby Wambach's book on supporting other women. And we could get together monthly and just chat about everything that's going on in our careers. We get advice from each other. We ask each other for recommendations and things like that. One thing I want to leave you with before I close that out, though, is when I was a baby lawyer and an associate at a law firm, I really used to think I'm supposed to sit in my office and I'm supposed to figure this all out on my own. And I'm supposed to like know it all. And I'm supposed to just be able to figure it out independently. But I'm more of a brainstormer and I like to talk things out with people. And I thought that was a weakness when I was an associate at the law firm. I thought it's a weakness of mine that I can't just sit in here and have my best ideas all by myself at my computer and at my desk. And what I've learned over time is that is not a weakness. It is the way we get the best results, right? Talking to others, sharing ideas, brainstorming together. And that when you're bringing in all those different perspectives, you actually get a much better result. And I shouldn't expect, even now in a leadership role, that like I have all the answers or I know it all, or I'm going to get the best solution on my own. So that collaborative element is so important. And I think we have lots of research now that bears that out. That was a little long. Sorry.
Fatima, let's turn to you then. I understand that you and Karen were together at Shepherd Mullin at some point, but talk to us about your journey when it comes to leveraging your peers to have impact at scale.
Sure, and thank you so much for having us on your inaugural roundtable. This is very exciting. From a law firm perspective, I practice in anti-corruption, ethics, and compliance on the investigation side, and trade regulatory on the compliance and investigation side. And it is strange to me, in an area that is very international, there's foreign policy involved, that there actually are not that many women partners in this space, although there are a lot of women in-house lawyers that practice in this space. And to your loneliness point, it does feel a little bit lonely from that perspective, because I don't have a ton of peers, other law firm partners that look like me or come from a similar background. And I have all of you who are my wonderful friends, but I'm very sensitive to the idea that when me, as a partner at a law firm whose job it is to get clients, like I want to build a relationship with you, Hema, and you, Karen, without you thinking in the back of your mind, does she want my business? What is she going to ask? When is she going to ask it? And so I really do approach it from the perspective of my job is to build trust with you as a person, as a friend, as a woman, as a mom. And whatever happens, like, I want you to always feel like, no, I trust Fatima. I know that she has my best interests at heart. And whatever happens, if a business opportunity comes along that's right, great. But I am thinking about the long-term trust-based relationship. And if it happens, great. I would love to work with my friends that trust me. But if it doesn't, my job as a friend is to make you look good. So I really have tried to have that approach when I build relationships and connections with in-house lawyers, with other law firm partners, because there is this tendency like, she's competition, he's competition, everybody's competition. And I don't like that, right? As a person living on this earth, I want to look back at the end of it and say, what positive impact did we have on each other? What relationships did we build? What meaningful connections did we make? And Karin and I have talked a lot about this idea that if it makes sense for you to hire this other, like, this person is great. I might be saying no to business right now, but I know for you in this moment, that person is going to be a better fit for you. And I should not be scared to say that, right? I shouldn't feel like I am giving up or losing on something when I do that.
I just want to say, Fatima, I think you've done that really well, right? Like, I don't think, oh my God, I'm talking to Fatima. She's like pitching me for business. I think I'm talking to Fatima and she's my friend and we can bounce ideas off each other. And then of course, I look for ways to see if I can work with you.
Yes, of course.
Because I would love to be able to work with a friend and somebody that I trust.
Now I'll jump in for a second about my community. A lot of it has come from this podcast and also people I've met early on, people like Ellen Hunt, who also co-host, who became a mentor and a friend. And I think it's been, for me, a very organic way as I got more into this field. I think the usual things of the conferences and the other things that we all go to or really help and being able to connect. And I think it's a little different for those of us in-house because there is zero aspect of somebody. People can share policies and procedures. And we would probably share that with a law firm too, because our view is we don't want people to do good, to do well, to feel empowered, to make ethical decisions. That doesn't change from where we were. But I will also say my best relationships with outside counsel and also with different vendors are people who say exactly what you just said, that I feel actually care about me, care about learning about what we do and our business, and are able to say, we can be great with you for X, but maybe not so much for this. And here's someone else, because that to me shows that they're not trying so hard in a law firm case to get billable hours, that they're not trying to figure out what's right for me as our client. And I think the dividends they pay, because that's not, that to me is different than selling. That is. And I think it's important to keep in mind. And I think women are very good at that. I sometimes think that women are better about it than men, because I think some of them, not always, are looking for, you know, maybe more likely to look for the business aspect. But I recently brought in a new vendor who's been my friend in the compliance community for several years. And that didn't make me decide they were the best product. But I will say the other thing that they did was exactly what you just said to me. They were the only ones who said to me, we hope that this is the right thing for you, but if it isn't, we'll work together later. And it was genuine and it made all the difference.
I love the radical empathy of the no pitch zone, right? The fact that you're just looking at us as human beings and peers as opposed to potential customers. And certainly I've seen that with you, Fatima. One of the first things you did for me was introduce me to my peers at in-house, other companies that I might have wanted to meet. So that was a wonderful thing. And I've got a really cool story with Karin. I'd love to hear her thoughts on it from her angle. But with Karin, the way we met was a cold call, literal cold call. I was going to apply for a job where Karin was working. And I noticed that she had been there. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to reach out. And I think the reason I had the confidence to reach out without even knowing Karin was I knew about the generosity of spirit that is in this community. And boy, did you deliver, Karin, because not only did you take my call, make time for me, but you then, not unlike Fatima, then introduced me to other people in the company I could speak to. So talk to me a bit about how you've built your network and how you respond to things like that, the cold call.
Your cold call. But what you did, though, took some courage, right? Because you didn't know me. I think we both had some connection to Georgetown, but you didn't know me. It took a little bit of sleuthing on your part to even figure out my connection, because I was parent company, or I can't remember the exact structure at that time, but it wasn't totally clear from LinkedIn. So it took you a little bit of work to get there. And I was just, wow, she dug in and figured this out. So I'm going to talk to this person and see, you know, what I can do for her. And then My dad was a real estate agent. This sounds totally off topic, but it's not. And I watched him when I was growing up and how he dealt with clients. And I don't know why, but I have this kind of vivid memory of seeing him saying that he was like working on the long-term relationships with these clients, and that sometimes he would tell them, don't buy that, or not the right time to sell, or things that would go against his own interests, seemingly, because he wasn't making the sale, but that he felt like having that long-term trust relationship was the most important thing. And it was like a long-term view. And I just always remember him talking about that. And that has informed how I look at a lot of these relationships. But I really do believe in building these connections and relationships and helping other people where we can. So I don't know. I got your email and I was like, I'm gonna talk to this woman and let's see if I can connect her to different people so she can get the right information she needs to know if this is a good fit for her or not. And I think people should take cue from you, Hema, and be willing to reach out, right? And it might not always pan out. Sometimes you might not hear back, but at least you tried. And if you try, you might get some really good and important information and build like a lifelong friendship, right? It's really
special.
That's how we met. Because then we've just stayed in touch over the years and continued to talk to each other. And we bounce ideas off each other. And some of my favorite conversations are when you and I just start like brainstorming on a topic. And there's so much interesting generation of ideas and creativity that comes from those conversations that I would have missed out on if I hadn't responded to you. Like, that's not why I did it. But in hindsight, you're like, boy, if I had just been like, no, I'm too busy to talk, I would have missed out on this rich relationship that we have, where I think we build such great ideas and have such creativity from our conversations.
And I'd like to say that extends beyond our day jobs. It's the business as usual, but we get to get creative on what we'd like, where we'd like to take our functions. But also there's personal issues we might be able to share with each other. Yeah. And our leadership at home is the same as our leadership at work. And I know you and I have talked about parenting before. Maybe Fatima, I'll turn to you on that, because I saw a post that you put on LinkedIn recently about your experience with CCWC. So you talk a little bit about what that is and why that's important to you and how that's helped you.
Sure. And first, I want to say I love this story. And it just also highlights not just the courage, confidence, and just like openness, but because Karen could have sucked. She doesn't. She's wonderful and loved and lovely, right? But you didn't know. But it's amazing to me that, I don't know, there's something about the way we have operated and then built connections and then the small world nature of it. And it's just, I love this story. It will be together like when we're grandmothers, like vacationing, and then we'll just be like, remember that time that you just cold called on LinkedIn? So, I've been part of other diversity programs and other kind of CCWC, Corporate Council, Women of Color, and LCLD, Leadership Council on Legal Diversity. The idea really is to bring this network of whether it's attorneys of color together that are in-house in law firms or women of color together. And I think the focus is obviously like building that next generation of leaders, all of that. But it is business opportunities between in-house and outside counsel. And going into that, I could see, I also observed, Karen, to your point about how you observed your dad, like I observed some people, I think in those spaces where it did feel a little more transactional. And instead of just saying, I'm here to meet people that I really connect with, and whatever that is, whether that's an in-house person or another outside lawyer. And I have cherished kind of some of the relationships that I built in those programs because they really are my peer mentors. And today, having people outside of my organization to be able to, if I'm thinking about a change, if I'm thinking about an idea, if I'm having trouble with a colleague, like to lean on them and to get advice and to talk about best practice, all sorts of things, parenting, to like, we all talk to each other about all sorts of issues that impact our personal and professional lives from a position of trust and friendship. And just, we want the best for each other. And having those peer mentors, because when we're baby lawyers, remember Karen, when we're like associates and everyone's like sponsorship, mentorship, da, 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 da. And it's like, that's, you hear about that all the time. Like you must have a sponsor, you must have a champion. And I still believe that absolutely you do need to have that even at our stage. But I will say like at the stage that we are in right now, my peer mentors, you have Karen, but at least all the folks that I've met that are partners at firms and in-house counsel and or in the government, like they are my peer mentors. And those relationships are so critical at this stage of our careers to move to that next level or whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, for sure. Probably, and you're right, probably at this stage more important, right?
But I thought that what Fatima was saying is a really good sort of segue to a couple things that I was thinking about when first starting with mentoring, sponsoring advocates. I think they are really important, but I also think early in your career, you think it's one person. They're like, find your mentor, find them. I found in mine, there are so many different people to fill those roles, many of whom are women, different. The diversity, so the diversity in who's helping you on problems can be substantive or their experiences, or some people don't really be, they're like your anti-mentor, you're like, this is not who I want to turn out to be. And that doesn't, then I think those are really important things to think about, is that you have, I think of it as like now, like my kitchen cabinet, and it changes. What do you need? And I think the other part of it, and I think you touched on this, is talking about groups, and you talk about Muslim women, and we were talking earlier, I'm Jewish, and I joke, and with everything going on in the world right now, the communication and the trust you can have with the combination of both talking to people who have very similar experiences and very different experiences, we can bring back into our careers, especially in a time like now where we really have to have grace and understanding, because the world is spinning in directions that not only are we feeling certain ways personally, I think most of us are involved some way, shape, or form with talking about these things with our organizations. And as I speak now, I'm going to say a lawyerly thing that I'm giving you my opinions. This is certainly not the Pearson thing, but my views of how to do all the things you need to do personally while try to guide things in a good direction and give everyone grace. So I think that's, I don't know if it's been on top of mind for the rest of you, but it has been for me a lot.
Yes, Lisa, no, that's so important, because certainly in the last few days, just, and we're all speaking from a place of privilege. We're far away from, we're safe. We live in we have means, relative security, but just thinking about how to navigate complicated issues that may impact you personally, professionally in your organization, and having those connections. Lisa, you mentioned you're like, I have colleagues that I want to make sure that even inadvertently, like you're not saying something that might be hurtful or impact someone in a negative way, or saying, making sure that whatever we, the actions that we take or the statements that we make within the organization to support others is in a way that's inclusive and actually acknowledges what other people are going through. And as leaders, right, it's so important. We all operate in the space of ethics and compliance. We have overlap with ESG. It's just, it's so, I think having these connections, because I can go to him and be like, if I did this, would it be really dumb? I could ask her, like, or if I was going to, I want to do this, what do you think about it? And to get perspectives from outside your firm or outside your company, but to understand the landscape. I just had a breakfast with a friend of mine who's at Verizon, and we talked about this particular thing about companies making statements on what's happening and just like the process and how it's impacting people, and getting that broader perspective is so important so that we can be thoughtful leaders.
It's such an interesting time, right? Because there is such a higher expectation of companies getting involved on issues that are happening in society. And it is really fraught. And I think everybody's struggling to figure out what that looks like. And I think just continually coming back to a place of sort of empathy and humanity and trying to understand what other people are going through and acknowledging hurt that other people are feeling, and just trying to continually come at it from what is the like empathetic approach to these things. But then also, what is companies I think are speaking too much. Again, I'm going to say, this is my personal opinion, but I think some people and even employees are wanting companies to speak more than ever before. And it's, what is the appropriate place for that? And I think if you're coming at it from a place of empathy, that is a really good way to ground the approach. But yeah, it's the importance of community in times like this. I think you're right, Fatima, is so important, right? Just to have even like sounding boards and then bring in those diversity of perspectives to make sure that we're not inadvertently causing harm or furthering harm.
I'd love to share a story actually on that, because you know, we're all navigating that exact question right now, that it's an open question as to how involved companies should and shouldn't be. And we may all have opinions of it, but actually while we're having the opinions, we're trying to navigate it in real time. So the story I wanted to share was, I'm relatively new to compliance leadership at my company, so was involved in some of the conversations this week as we tried to navigate providing the right environment and providing the support for our multicultural employees. But what struck me was, in the building of a tiger team to consider these issues, you needed to have relationships with the people that were in the tiger team. So it made a massive difference that we had all made connections before as humans, as peers, so that when we came into the room to do something in response to a very delicate issue, we were able to exhibit that kindness and generosity to each other and grace because we'd built the relationship before. And I actually got some advice from on a conference I was at this week about how to build a tiger team. And the one thing was said was, don't wait until the incident to build the relationships. You might have a list of who should be in the room, but don't let that be the first time you've met them. And so that to me was great advice, a practical advice on how to navigate these issues, because we will in our roles as compliance leaders, but really just leaders across the company. I'm going to say women, people that care, that want to have impact. We are going to find ourselves in these rooms. And what we want to do is make sure we've laid the foundation with our network so that we can deliver in the moment.
To share with you. So I think this is a challenging thing right now. And this is why I think that, because I think the foundation of so much in work, I think we're seeing research that backs this up, and we're seeing a lot of evidence that supports that the idea is you need to have a foundation of trust first to support the right kind of performance. And to really support high performance, you need this trust. And you need trust to get to the right place. But it's also hard to build trust and to spend time focusing on that when you're in a resource-stripped environment and when everybody's having to do as much as they can with fewer resources, because we all know it's the economy and most companies are in that space right now, right? Like, we're all looking at reducing our use of resources. So it is, I think, a particular challenge right now. And I'm in a relatively new role in my company, and just thinking back on the past year, I do this where I try to look back and have a retrospective and think where I could have done better. And I'm realizing I really need to be developing those relationships of trust. At the same time, I feel hesitant to be a burden on somebody else's time. And so it's this interesting like thing that I've been navigating myself, where I'm thinking through like, how do I build relationships of trust to support doing the best job for the company? But when everybody's so strapped for time and resources. And so I've been like wrestling with that. And I think it's a really important question right now as we're all navigating this challenging economic time and time in business.
So it's so interesting, because even from the law, especially with return to work and what does that mean and training junior, it's all that same conversation, right? Like how they're like, we'll have a check-in call. If a junior, that's just a burden on them. Like they need to do that. We all feel like we're all trying to manage to our time and do the work that we need to do. And I have, Karen, too, been thinking about this, because all of that takes time. Be like, let me take you out for coffee while you just are stressed about the thing that's there on your plate and the deadline. And I wonder if, like, when you think about it in, like, bite-sized chunks. So I had this interaction recently where I was working with another law firm on a transaction, and I was getting frustrated because the question seemed whatever. So I felt short. It was an associate on the other side, and I think I was a little bit short on the phone. And then I was like, I'm going to send him a note and say, I'm sorry, I was just right, because I don't want this associate at this other firm to think she was nasty. But you feel those little interactions, if you inject kindness or empathy, I think that's such a key point, Karen, right? Because as ethics lawyers, I always think, am I ethical? Like, I have to be ethical as an ethics lawyer. I have to be kind. I have to be empathetic as working in this space and inject those little bits of moments when we can to build the trust. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think it's a mix, because I think when I was a baby lawyer at a law firm, it was a long time ago, but I really wished that I felt the confidence to talk about certain things or be open with things I could have done better that would have saved me a lot of time. But I didn't want to ask because I didn't want to show vulnerability. And I didn't. And I see now when I am on the other side of some of those things, I say to people, look, don't spend half a day trying to figure something out if I can do it in 5 minutes. may not be right, but people have experience. And I think that is really good for both sides of those things in terms of building trust in the relationships. And it's a little different. It isn't opposing counsel. It isn't something else. And sometimes you have to be tough. They can't always think you won't be, because that's not great either. But you can say, this is what I did and this is where it is. And sometimes you can learn from it, and it makes the people feel empowered and to trust you to say, this bad thing happened. I'm not sure what to do about it, because they find that to be a safe space to say that. And when you're trying to be proactive about potential future issues for an organization, I have people who get back to me from investigations and stuff like that, or raise concerns, because they feel like they can talk about something that went wrong.
I think that's critical, Lisa. You're hitting on the point there, is you're leaving space for people to be heard and seen and valued. And so that's different to taking space, Fatima, in terms of asking for a coffee. It's like leaving space. There's an element of, dare I say, unconditional love in it, right? It's I am here to hear you, not to judge you, not to give you the answers necessary, just to help. And I've seen that well, you know, even these most issues that we're seeing over the last few weeks. People have instinctive reactions to things, and they're allowed to have space to have those instinctive reactions. It doesn't mean it's the answer. It doesn't mean there's an emotional attachment to an outcome. It just means we've left space for people to air their instinct. We're human, right? There's an instinctive human reaction, and it's okay to air that, let it sound out. And sometimes people just need a soundboard. I will say, my mum always used to tell me off, because I would always try to solve her problem if she talked to me. And she said to me once, Hema, I just need to air. And that was a great lesson. She told me that I don't need to be the fix-a-lot. And so I've learned that sometimes unconditional love is getting out of the way and just making sure I create that space for people. It's not easy, but this is why we get together as a community and figure out how to do it. Because I do believe we can do hard things well, but we can do them better together. And I think that's very cliched, but really is what I've learned from this community, is that if I can come to you and say, I've had a hard day, I'm not sure how I showed up, and I'm not sure how I'd like to show up next time, I get this space to admit I may have done it incorrectly. And you have, gosh, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I think we can go on and on, but I want to just make sure I give space for, again, giving space, Fatima, you first, and then Karen, just to share any last words you've got for this community in terms of how you've positioned yourself to have the best impact and the most impact in your community.
Thanks, Emma. I think about this a lot, about the idea of what motivates a person, right? What motivates you in your job? And for a lot of people, like, money motivates them, or power, and I think for a lot of us, we are motivated by impact, right? We want to have that positive impact on others, like within our organization, on the company as a whole, on the community, on the compliance community as at large. And if you always have that in your mind of what's my positive impact, empathy as like these core, what are your core values as a professional? Because I think in this stage of who am I as a lawyer? What am I trying to do? And if you have that, Karen, I love that empathy, the radical empathy idea, positive impact, and you keep those as your, then these meaningful connections, the building the community, building relationships flows naturally from that. And your instinct will always be like, oh, I want to introduce this to, oh, this will be good for Hema. This will be good for Karen. Like, this will be good for Lisa. And that will drive what you do and how you build relationships.
I love that. Karen, over to you.
I can't remember exactly what your question was, but what I've been contemplating here is that it's not always easy. It's not always easy to show up as our best selves. And what I'm finding for me personally is needing to just have kind of things that tether me, and like regular kind of check-ins on like how I'm doing, how I'm showing up, where am I not showing up, how I want to show up, where can I do better? And so that's what I'm trying to focus on right now, is having those regular points where I step back and assess, and like, where am I? What's not feeling right? What is feeling right? And how can I just keep doing better and better over time? So that's one thing that's present for me, is we have to acknowledge like our humanity, and we're not perfect. We're not always going to get it right. But, and it's, I think it's important to recognize that and have some vulnerability and humility about that, and be willing to then look at where to improve and get better, and get that advice from other people on how you can do better in the relationship or do better for the organization. So that's one thing. And then as we just think about this, building trust and connections in this challenging time where people feel like they might not have so much time or whatever, it's thinking about you have to think about each relationship on its own and like what the value is. So if you're taking a thoughtful approach, and then you're willing to reach out and have the courage to solicit that connection, I think that's the way to go about it. But I do think you have to have a thoughtful approach for each individual situation, right? Like just sometimes I get a lot of emails from vendors and things, and some of them are thoughtful, some of them are not thoughtful. And so it's like, how do you have that thoughtful connection point that actually resonates where there might be like a mutually beneficial exchange? So you know, those are my two points as I think about this.
Thanks so much. And I'm going to close us off because I think, Karen, what you just said right there about the thoughtfulness and everybody's Fatima also, Hema, when we started contemplating this GWIC 2.0, as we called it, some of the people, the first thoughts about, I got amazed at some of the notes. People were very concerned that when we were doing roundtable, that somehow this was going to turn out to be like a sponsored event for sales or other things. And they were very concerned about, will we lose connections to individuals? Hopefully for those of you who reached out about that, hopefully today has also reassured you that we just got to hear more things that grow us more as a community and building that and building trust and connections. And I just wanted to say that I'm really grateful for you all taking the time to do that, and that this turned out to be probably the perfect way to start this forward and to build. And on behalf of Hema, me, the whole podcast, and our sponsors, Corporate Compliance Insights and the Compliance Podcast Network, thank you so much, as I just talked about sponsors, and have a really great rest of the day.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Great Women in Compliance. We hope you'll join us in honoring the great women in the compliance field by subscribing to this podcast and leaving a review.